appreciate the testimony our brother has shared with us from this brother speaking from the grave. I wanted to go back, just, well, not necessarily back, really, but before we go any further into this matter of church government, which is the particular distinctive that we will take up now, I come across something that I wanted to share with you in ground that we have already covered. My wife has been graciously searching now for some weeks, an ongoing search for anything and everything that can be found in print from the great and glorious Palmer, B.M. Palmer. And she has secured for me whatever books that are things that are in book form. But then she has also found a place and a way to find some other speeches and things that he delivered in various places that were not sermons and never made it into a book. But, and then she has been able to download some of those and supply me a copy of those communications, those speeches and things he delivered. And one of them that she found for me and that I have thoroughly enjoyed, I strongly recommend that you, all of you, each of you, your home, get with her and get the link where these things may be found. And she has printed off two especially that I want the heart of. I strongly recommend that every one of you download and print and read. One, I have in my hand today, this, just a few sheets here. It's only, get how many pages? It's four sheets, printed front and back, so that would just be eight pages. This is a tribute that Ben Palmer brought at the death of John C. Calhoun, of whom most of you know I am myself direct blood descendant from John C. Calhoun, and I don't intend to read you all of this. This was, but this particular tribute was delivered on April the 21st, 1850. Calhoun had died March the 31st of 1850, and Palmer was asked to come and deliver a tribute, eulogy, obituary, whatever you want to call it, to Calhoun there in South Carolina. Much of what he said in that speech was so very, very timely. Much of it could be read today, and you would have thought that Palmer was here today observing our world and stood and spoke just yesterday these words, such as the timeless nature of the things he had to say on this occasion of remembering the life of John C. Calhoun. But in the midst of all of that, of course, John C. Calhoun being himself a senator and a statesman, much of what Palmer had to say related to his statesmanship. But then he goes on to expound that scripture in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17, he says that this matter is to the intent that the living God may know, that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. And of course he takes that in the context of the death of John C. Calhoun, and he brings, has much to say in the introduction to this matter of the profound disaster it was for the South, for South Carolina, and for the South in general, that this man had fallen. But in the midst of that, he does not take up a political speech. The speech is not primarily political in nature, although he cannot avoid the observance of what the nation was at that time experiencing. The crisis had already begun, well begun, and there was, war was looming. But he allows himself just in one paragraph to address himself somewhat to that. And this is where this relates to our study of Baptist distinctions, because we made much of the fact of civil government. The Baptist view of civil government. Now, of course, Palmer was not a Baptist. However, he embodied those principles with regard to civil government, the same principles that we hold. He was not, in that sense, he was not true to his own denominational theology. But in speaking to that, he, as I said, he allows himself a slight step to the side from his main object, which was to address this audience, which was a very large audience, gathered to honor John C. Calhoun and speak to them with regard to their standing in civil government. And these are the words that he said in that relation. Were I permitted to address the Congress, of which our venerated statesman was a conspicuous member, I would deliver this message with emphasis to them. And of course, he goes on with the message itself, and the points that he brings are just profound biblical. But then he says, I would seek to remind them that government itself is an ordinance of God. Now he said, if I could be permitted to address the Congress, here's what I would say to them. I would remind them that government itself is an ordinance of God. This is what we taught here. That a special providence was concerned in their election to rule a free and generous people. A special providence, he called it. He would remind these congressmen, you are here, elected by the hand of a special providence. And that of necessity, they must be held immediately responsible to God for their discharge of the solemn trust committed by Him to them. Now, I had made that emphasis when we covered this part of our Baptist distinctives. Government is ordained of God. But those that are elected by a free people to govern are put there by the special providence of God and have a responsibility an accountability to God for how they reign, how they rule. And I'm afraid this is an element that has been terribly missing now for several generations in the doctrine of our churches. As the veil is for a moment drawn aside, which separates the throne of Jehovah from their view, I would echo the voice which seems to sound from the throne. Luke 16:2. Give account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest no longer be steward. Luke 16:2. He says, I would tell them, if I could speak to them, you have an accountability to God, and you will answer for your stewardship. I would remind them that we all must stand before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account of the deeds done in the body, that they can never merge their personal responsibility as men in their public character as rulers and lawgivers, that for all their plans, both good and evil, for all their words, filthy or fitly or unfitly spoken, for all their thoughts, whether honorable, honorable or disgraceful to those who cherish them, they must distinctly answer to the great God in that great day when all shall be tried by just and holy standard. I would tell Congress to their face, you will give an account to God for your every word, your every action, yes, your every thought. Can you imagine today any man standing and telling Congress that? I wonder if we could even find a single preacher in this whole country that would dare to do that if he were given the opportunity. But Palmer said, this is what I would tell them. This is what I would tell them. I would warn them against that consuming ambition which directed only to selfish and personal gain, eats like a cancer into the soul, and soon obliterates the last traces of honor, generosity, and patriotism in the breasts of public men. I'd warn them against personal gain as a motive. I would dissuade them from that intense devotion to party which shuts the country out of view and forestalls that conciliation and mutual concession without which they can neither be statesmen nor patriots. I would rebuke that bitterness of language which not only mars the force and dignity of debate, but generates a malignity of feeling leading often to schemes of violence and brutality which put the nation to the blush. It is a part of the inspired description of the wickedness of men that the poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Scripture says, above all, I would exhort them that the rulers of a Christian people, and by the way, he makes a very strong case for the fact that this nation was sitting on a Christian foundation. I would exhort them that the rulers of a Christian people should have regard to that divine law whose precepts are obeyed and whose sanctions are acknowledged in every hamlet throughout this broad land. I would teach that as personal religion is the surest guarantee of private virtue, a Christian statesman who fears God and loves his fellow men will be the wisest in counsel and the safest trustee of the rights of others. Say that last line. That's all I'm going to read. But let me say that line again. I would teach the Congress, if I could speak to them, that as personal religion is the surest guarantee of private virtue, so Christian statesman who fears God and loves his fellow men will be the wisest in counsel and the safest trustee of the rights of others. He has much, much more to say. This is a glorious speech concerning the state of the nation in his day and the loss of this great patriot, John C. Calhoun, and the future that could be anticipated. And by the way, he goes on and not only predicts, but declares without question what would be the events of the coming years. And he predicted absolutely correctly. War, crisis, destruction, damnation. He condemns radicalism that seeks change for the sake of change, socialism that breaks down all partitions of society, and agrarianism that levels all distinctives of fortune and birth. But his position with regard to the civil government is noteworthy, as it reflects what we have taught here. This was done in 1850, the speech delivered as a eulogy to John C. Calhoun, a tribute. It's called the Carolina Tribute to Calhoun. Of course, his office was on the square in my hometown, Abbeville. He practiced law within, I don't know, mile and a half, 2 miles of my home when he was living, 1850. So, I'll just leave it with that today. We won't go into a whole lesson. I did want to just impart to you that little bit of blessing that I gleaned from this lecture. As I say, my wife can give you information on how to retrieve other lectures. I have found everything B.M. Palmer preached or spoken to be profound and intensely spiritual. Of course, what he brought to this convention was not a political speech. That he allowed himself that little bit of personal words of what he wished he could say to Congress. But then he goes on and unfolds that scripture that I gave you in Daniel in, 3 points. He has 3 points of a message that he delivered to them.